Get it. Well,
that was on Roy's blog this morning.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's why it doesn't. That's why it doesn't look familiar to me. It's because I didn't see Roy's blog this morning. Okay, well, we're gonna put that on hold because I have nothing to contribute in that respect. And office. Okay. Bob, I'm almost ready for it. I think we're online. Is this working? Hello. Can you hear me okay? Good. Probably good enough. Internet. I'll try this one more time.
Say again.
I love the notes I've taken this class. I just happened to see this one. And I'm reading it, and at the end I wrote, whatever that means.
Well, I usually well, of course, two question marks. And we're done. Sure, people can miss remotely. Or log on and place that after.
Yes, it is.
Well, and I finally fixed the feed so that now you can subscribe to it on your phone and you can get it there.
Oh, really?
Whereas before we were having a lot of trouble with it. It was not downloading. You could use iTunes to grab it, but you couldn't use your iDevice to grab it. Yeah, where is Russ?
Yeah, I noticed he wasn't here to collect money.
We blessed his sheriff on him. He's what?
He's gone today.
He's been here.
The money man.
He's been here. And he hasn't been here. Chester, your VPN is not hiding the passes.
No, I use Clickbox.
That's right.
Software and hardware.
I'm having trouble with my software. Poor Scott, spent about an hour and a half at the house last week. He has to come back again today. I don't know if it's my computer or the router or
the line that's coming in. Are you making cable?
It's Telmex.
And you have enough to watch movies?
Yeah. Well, right now, I'm getting this Mexican Netflix. And that's okay. Except that my husband and I don't hear about those movies.
But, Chester, to answer your question, it is enough to watch movies as long as you're not expecting a lot of other internet stuff happening at the same time. If you dedicate it to internet, to movies, then it's fine.
When I watch movies, my computer shut off.
Yeah.
So in other words,
it won't be enough when we start dealing with 4K content. There will need to be a better solution.
That's going to be a while. Yeah. I'm going to wait a minute to get a TV, too.
So I shouldn't be upstairs browsing on the computer when Rick's using Netflix.
Well, you can, but you can't expect Rick to be having a great experience, nor you, because you have very limited bandwidth. Really limited amount of speed.
Maybe I should increase that.
I don't know if you're able to.
I don't know if I am either. I don't want to take the chance to pay more and have nothing happen.
Well, I've been after Telmex to install.
Gracias, amiga.
Install.
Okay.
Fiber optic. I'm a block away.
Gracias.
So, do you look at them? The movies on the movie service from Telmex?
Are you talking about the Claro video?
Yeah.
I haven't played with it yet.
I used to share internet with a neighbor. Now I've got my own account, and that's one of the features to talk about.
Wouldn't they give you like a month free on that? to try it out. I think that was part of their sign-up.
Well, this is, says it's gratis. That part of the internet fee is covered. So there's nothing extra for Claro.
I would double check that, because it seems like what they were doing is they were allowing you to have it free for a month see if you like it. Because it is a combination of equipment and service that they're providing for you.
Oh, you can't just use a smart TV to your router?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, that. Yeah, they would have to have a Claro video app for your TV to begin with. And I'm not... The way it's looked to me, that whole offering is a way of controlling both the services and the equipment. They've got a Claro video box that they give you.
Like a dongle?
Very similar to like a Roku, but it's specific for that service. But that's about the extent of my experience with it. I've read about it, I've seen the box, I've touched the box before, but I've never used it for any extended period of time or seen what their catalog is like.
Movies in English, and she says you can translate. So I don't know if that means that there's subscription.
Yeah, since it's a Telmex offering, because I really gracias. There's a good chance that they've done a job of licensing content with English. I'm just speculating. Because Telmex exists outside the realm of just Mexico. And so they may have done a good job of having a variety of languages that you could watch the
Spanish
content
and Portuguese.
Instead of just Spanish and Portuguese, that's right.
Brazilian Portuguese.
Well, I'm ready. I have coffee. I'm recording. There's a message out that we're broadcasting live. We're online. I think everything is a go. So I'm going to introduce us if you guys are ready. This is the San Carlos Computer Club, and I'm Scott, if you don't recognize me. I'm one of your friendly local computer people, and we get together every Tuesday and have kind of a battle of the minds and describe the new technologies we're using and help each other out when they're having problems with internet and computers here in Mexico. And so welcome. This is a huge group. I have done something unusual this last season. If you haven't been here the last couple of meetings, I've actually been slightly organized and had a list of topics to work from. I do have a list of topics, but I will open it up right now to anything you guys want to talk about, just to begin with. If there's any questions that we should hit,
I usually have one or two or three a week, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm trying to download Hotspot Shield.
Okay.
And not working very well. It's, I go to install it, and it says, this is corrupted. So I try to uninstall it, and the control panel says I do not have that right. I need to be an administrator. So I'll go through that and come up with a black screen, but I don't want to touch it.
It sounds like you have other problems besides just Hotspot Shield. But had it been installed before?
No, this is Windows 10.
This is Windows 10. So it wasn't installed before. It was upgraded to Windows 10.
Yeah.
Okay, and when you go to install, I would really avoid that kind of software.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a time when we were using Hotspot Shield as a free VPN to get access to things like Hulu, any services on the other side of, on the U.S. side of things, to appear as though we were in the United States.
Right.
But since then, at least the Ola VPN has been found to... It was the same premise. It's been found to be a server of malware for people on the network. They've been making a business model out of selling your privacy. That's what they're making money off of, is taking your information and sharing it with third parties. But then it was discovered that the Ola network had become a place where they were distributing malware. So whether intentionally or not, it became a very dangerous place to be messing around. Hotspot Shield is probably only a hair above that at this point. And because you're trying to install it in Windows 10, I could only imagine that's probably the problem. They probably have not put out a product that's ready for Windows 10 to begin with. I think at this point, if you're going to do VPNs, you probably want to stay away from free VPNs. You probably want to purchase one. And Hide My Ass is a good one. Say again? CyberGhost. I haven't used it, but you've used it before.
Just Google Hide My Ass. I have no idea what you did. Makes it look like you're in the States.
So CyberGhost, you can use it as a software VPN on your computer, or you can have it configured in your router. So
yeah, well, you need someone special to configure it in the router. It's a little complicated, yes.
If you're wondering, if you need to see what somebody special looks like, I'm that person right here. I can do that kind of stuff for you. That's one of the things that I really like about the Hide My Ass software is you can get into it real cheap and just install it in your computer and see if it meets your needs from your computer. And then later, if you want to put a smart TV behind it or a Roku behind it or an Apple TV, then it's just a matter of getting the right kind of router and setting it up, and you just continue with that same service.
I'll go ahead and spend $4.50.
Yeah, that's... yeah.
Hide My Ass along that line. You'll order it by the year.
Yeah,
it's get... It's quite a bit less.
Get a better price on it yearly?
Yes. If you try to sleep for 6 months, it's more money.
It's more money than just buying a full-out year. Well, I've bit the bullet and finally bought into Amazon Prime, which I have very little need for while I'm here, but all of a sudden I've got all these gifts I have to buy and upgrades I've got to do, and they just get sent right off to an address. They show up real quick. So part of the Prime subscription, if you guys aren't on Prime, is that you have access to a library of streaming content. Like Netflix, like Amazon's version of a Netflix. Is it better? You think it's better?
Good point. Netflix is PG. Amazon is not.
Right.
So you get more of a selection of things that you cannot get on Netflix.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about licensing deals. And so at any given time, one provider may have the content you want to see, whereas the other may not.
And I just want to mention that as a gentleman over there, CyberGhost is a wonderful paid thing. You can get it for $9.99 a month, and you can go on a monthly basis, and I think that you might even be able to get a special with the sign-up.
What
is
that?
I recommend it very, very highly.
CyberGhost.
CyberGhost, it's a Wikipedia
VPN
computer. CyberGhost, Hide My Ass, Whitopia, they're all on the same level.
Right, and they got servers all over the world. I mean, they got Spain, France, Mexico, or the United States, all over.
Well, and a VPN, like you could take advantage of the new Apple TV. I mean, this is one of the things about entertainment as we go into the future, is that you're going to have a dozen different service providers for this kind of content. You're going to have offerings like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and Apple, the iTunes Store, and all where you can rent or buy content to watch. And the new Apple TV has this universal search that we've seen on Amazon's Fire TV, where you can basically just tell your remote control, I want to see all the James Bond movies available, and it will line them up across your service providers. So maybe the movie you want to see isn't on Netflix, but it's on Prime. If you've got both, they both show up in your results. You can pick one or the other. But you can't take advantage of Prime unless you have a VPN. And that's why I'm starting to think I may have to buy into a VPN pretty soon. There's a show my daughters have gotten into called Androids. It's a Canadian... kind of learning show that about it. It's plot driven. It's a little girl that builds robots, and my little girl has just become infatuated with it, and I can't find it anywhere but Amazon Prime. Mm. So to get it on the big screen, I may have to get a VPN so that we can watch it on the big screen.
Which would you get?
For a VPN? I would probably just pick one of the two. There's also one called ProVPN that I've heard good things about, but I've never had any experience with.
One of the two, what do you mean?
Oh, Ytopia or Hide My Ass. Those are the two that I've got the most experience with. And they're around the same price last time I looked, especially if you're paying by the year.
$50 a year, I think.
Well, my hardware, I think that's more than that.
Yeah, I don't think you have to buy the hardware to get into Ytopia.
Yeah, I bought the Cloakbox.
Right. And so that's what Cloakbox is all about, is you buy the equipment to begin with, and they give you a year of Ytopia. And then you just perpetuate your Ytopia account.
But I stopped my Hulu because it said, you're using a VPN, and we're only broadcasting to the continental United States.
Really?
Right.
Which VPN were you using?
I was using Ytopia.
You could try different locations in the United
Maine
States.
Or something like that.
And what's going to happen later is we'll have VPNs that support IPv6, and those have IPv6. The reason that Hulu can do that is it can identify pools of IPs that are used by VPN providers.
Yeah, right. That's what I figured.
Right? So IPv6 has so many numeric addresses. I mean, they say that every leaf on every tree in the planet could have their own address. So it'll be impossible for a service like Hulu to keep up with the number of IPs that are out there.
I don't know why they try very hard.
They're paid to. They're paid to. Yeah, I mean, that's part of their thing. Hulu only exists because the large content providers came together and created Hulu. And so they make money off of advertising, but they make money from, I want to say CBS, but it would be just an example.
Not from pay-per-views.
Right. They make money off of big organizations giving them money to host
their
content.
Yeah, I was a mystery why they would even try to be so precise.
Well, and then it's because they're counter to their deals of licensing in this country.
You wanted to look at CBS content, and it just reroutes me to CBS anyway.
Right.
So,
BFD. I was bringing up the Apple TV for a moment. I don't know if you guys have paid attention to the new Apple TV that's just been released. It's got storage on it. It's got an app store. It's got thousands of apps already ready to go on it because of the iPhones and the iPads. Apparently, it's very easy for developers to just move their apps right over to this new Apple TV. But there is a controversy going on right now. It comes with a new remote control. The remote control is made of glass, just like the iPhone.
Okay, here you go.
And so apparently, if you drop the remote control, it breaks.
Oh my God.
It shatters. Right? And this isn't your phone, which you shouldn't be dropping anyway, but this is a remote control, like the remote control for your TV. If you think about how often you've accidentally sent the TV remote control skittering a claw across the floor by accident.
Not by accident. Where in the hell is the remote? Okay, here it is.
Well, it probably wouldn't be that too big of a deal for this product, except apparently their old remotes are not compatible with it. And I bring this up because if you are considering an Apple TV, this is a really good example of why I always tell people to wait on products. Wait on Windows 10. Wait on the new iPhone. Wait on the new Apple TV. Maybe, unless you consider yourself somebody that just needs to be on the bleeding edge and have money to burn.
Beta tester.
Yeah, you're basically a beta tester. And Apple charges a premium to be a beta tester. And they have software in the App Store for your iPhones and your iPads to work with Apple TV. However, it doesn't work with the new Apple TV. So they're not having a very good launch of this product.
Isn't there also an issue between their TV and the new Microsoft TV? I can't remember, it was in USA Today, a discussion or that the Apple TV has some problems as related to other TVs that may be better. Or Samsung, I think. Samsung.
You're talking about the physical device they plug it into? I haven't read anything like that, but I'll look for it now that you've mentioned that. The thing that I just find a bit insulting is you pay $149 for a new box, and you get this remote with it. The remote has the potential of being... The guy that the story's being passed around... This is brand new, so we've got one story. We'll have more pretty soon. But it fell off his couch, a 2.5-foot drop, and shattered the remote. It's made of glass. It's got a touch pad on it, like your phone does. It has a it's not a screen, but it's a surface, like the touch pads on the laptops. And so there's lots of gesture controls that Apple wants you to use that remote for, but you're not going to be able to do that if it's shattered, right? And then there's no options if you shatter it. You can't use your phone like you could with the old Apple TV. You can't use your iPad like you could with the old Apple TV. You can't take your old Apple TV remote control and use it on the new Apple TV. There is no universal remote control out there for the new Apple TV. I mean, this all seems like stuff Apple could have had it sorted out before they even announced the Apple TV, but they didn't. So they're...
Sounds like you're ice screwed.
They're eating iCrow right now.
But I saw an ad for a flexible screen for cell phones that replaces the glass so that the phone is flexible, and if you drop it, nothing breaks.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be awesome. But so, yeah, as far as Apple TV goes... $149 for the minimal one, $199 for double the memory. I think it's a 32 or a 64. You're going to be able to run apps on it. Wait. Just wait. There are other options that are great, and they've been proven and tested and a lot cheaper. You can buy a brand new Roku for $69, or you could get their 4K. There's another thing. 4K doesn't actually exist. We talk about it a lot. But there isn't a lot of 4K content out there. We don't have a lot of the internet that would be required to pass you 4K content, so you can't take advantage of it. You probably don't have a TV yet that has 4K. And this brand new Apple TV device, it's 1080p. It doesn't support 4K either.
Really?
Yeah. So you're in no hurry to get into this device. There are a lot of other options out there.
What about the new Roku?
There's not a lot of reasons to get into that just yet either, but it does support 4K. Yes?
Scotty, I've got to mention that CyberGhost, the prices I quoted off a premium service. You can sign up with CyberGhost and use that free VPN as well. You don't get as many servers, but you do have the opportunity to use that free VPN service.
Oh, so what's their free VPN? So going back to VPNs, what's their free VPN service like?
Basically, they give you a list of servers that you can use on the VPN. The premium servers are obviously more and less people use the premium service than the free ones. And I'm sure you'll get better bandwidth.
But do you get like advertising cast to you on the free one?
Oh yeah.
That's cool. Free trial.
I don't
service.
Believe so.
No, it's from Strong VPN.
Oh, okay. I've heard of Strong VPN.
Yeah, CyberGhost.
It says CyberGhost instant order approval pay, strongvpn.com.
Well, I go to CyberGhost.com. I don't know about that. I mean, they've got to be careful. A lot of these websites, you know, they use a popular name and then they go ahead and do their own thing. I would go right to CyberGhost.com if you can. Or CyberGhostVPN.com, I believe, is the actual a web address.
You can get a free VPN on Google.
CyberGhost. Google
Play.
For the desktop. I don't use it on Android, but that's for the regular computers.
I don't know.
Well, I've never used CyberGhost, but I'm going to check it out.
CyberGhost.
Okay.
I have a Kia phone.
Not
Ghost. Good one.
All right.
CyberGhost.
I'm not sure whether it's a battery or the battery charger or
mountain
what.
Boats.
But I get a picture of a battery, and the bottom is red.
Okay, well, it definitely sounds like it needs to be charged.
Yeah, so I'm not sure whether it's...
Have you plugged it? Have you left it plugged in for an extended period of time, and it doesn't charge?
No.
Are you sure you've got a good charger on it?
Well, it's the one that came with the phone.
It is the one that came with the phone. It might have a bad battery on it.
I replace the battery.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'll direct you to my brother-in-law. He's the cell phone hospital in Wyomas there. He is the local expert on all that.
Reading
stuff.
Your old notes.
And so let's talk after the meeting. I'll just get his information.
I have a question about that.
Okay.
Well, a lot of times, on Facebook, and the video
made in China.
Click on it, so it did not be.
You bought it at Harbor Freight.
Not able to do it.
Chances are the same as my grill.
I'm not getting the joke. What is this, Bob?
About the battery.
About the battery?
Yeah. Right. Harbor Freight is good for just about any kind of tool, except anything that's electrical.
Okay.
And you can count on it. It's electrical and it's going to get more expensive.
Right.
Chances are it won't work.
Well, you know,
mine went for 4 hours.
And it might poison you.
Bob, you shouldn't try plugging a 110-volt piece of equipment into 220, though.
You're right.
That's good advice. That's very sound. Hey, be applied to a lot of topics.
I have a question.
Okay.
Okay. I am kind of surprised. I bet you've talked about it. Dropbox and OneDrive. OneDrive is Microsoft. I know a lot of people don't like Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
But Dropbox, I'm a plutocrat. I do have 4 computers. I know that you have more. But I have, and they're all old desktops.
Yeah.
And I'm running Windows 7 on every one of them. One I use for travel, which is a small little laptop. The other 3, one here in my house here, and 2 in Tucson. And I want to get stuff off my computer in Tucson. Files. And you're going to Alaska all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you always carry your laptop with you and you never had this problem. But I have a friend who travels all over the United States all the time with educational curriculum development with the schools. And she goes and she puts her stuff on her computer into their computers through the cloud. And I'm surprised with the people that travel, maybe everybody's got laptops.
Well, you know what you're describing, these cloud drives, they've been around for a while, and I've been using them for a long time. Dropbox is a great service provider. It's one of the first, and they've really got it dialed in. They've got it dialed in so much that they're an app platform. And so not only can you use them like a hard drive on your computer, but you can also load applications into them. And so they can have specific purposes. And those apps can float around anywhere that you install Dropbox. Or you don't even need to install it. You can just go to your Dropbox account on a web page and take advantage of those apps. They've got things as bizarre as word processors that float around with it, or calendar programs that float around with it. There's websites that the content can be provided simply out of a Dropbox account. It doesn't actually need to be out on a server. The advantages of these things, and some other names, you named like OneDrive, which has gotten very good from Microsoft. And I've mentioned in this club before, this is cloud storage. If you, the way OneDrive works, Microsoft's got this great offering. If you buy Microsoft Office, if you buy the subscription, the Office 365 subscription for $10 a month, or I think it's $100 a year, they give you a terabyte of online storage, which is basically, in our world, that's an unlimited storage, right? Especially if you're a laptop user, you're definitely not using that much storage on your laptop. And what that means is you can stick everything up in the cloud. You can back up the entire laptop to the cloud. You don't have to use Office once. But by buying the subscription to Office, you get this. This is one of the amenities of the Office package. You get a terabyte, a terabyte is so inconceivable to give you that it's easy to conceive from that point. It's unlimited. I mean, next year it'll be 2 terabytes, and the year after that it'll be 4, and the year after that it'll be 8, and there's no way you're going to catch up with needing that much space. So you could just consider it unlimited storage.
Can you access it like a directory?
Yes, that's the point, is that it's just a drive on your computer. It's installed as a drive on your computer. It's installed as storage on your tablet or on your phone.
As a cloud. In other words, you can go to a cloud and get that directory.
Well, to remain vague, if you are accessing files on your device, however you typically access them, this is slid right beside that typical access. So if you're accustomed to going to a folder to find your documents or pictures, well, this is the same thing. You'd go to a folder and find your documents and pictures that are out there in the cloud.
Oh, so if I go to my computer at the house and get my pictures.
That's right. As long as they're there, as long as they were put there in the first place, they're retrievable from your other devices.
But not from someone else's computer.
Well, that's the other thing that's interesting is, and Google has Drive. That's the name of Google's cloud storage, is Drive. Microsoft has OneDrive. Dropbox is Dropbox. Apple's is iCloud. And on some of these services, and I say some of these because I haven't tried this on all of them, so maybe they all have them, but I do know that under Google Drive and under Dropbox, and yeah, I don't know if Apple allows it, but the others out of those four allow you to share folders and files with other people that participate in the service. So if you've got a OneDrive account, I can give your Hotmail account access to my folder. So now that folder is being shared, and I can give you read permissions or I can give you edit permissions. So we could share a folder where we're putting documents and working out of them. That folder is always getting shared to whatever device I've installed OneDrive on, and I can see your changes and you can see mine.
You buy a new
world, I'm sorry. In the real world, how's the transfer in bandwidth?
You won't feel it.
You won't feel
it happens in the background. So what you'll feel is, where's the document? Document hasn't showed up yet. Or where's the pictures? I haven't seen all the pictures yet. It says I've got 10 in this folder when I know there's 100. Well, you're just waiting for that synchronization to catch up with you. But just like an incremental backup. Yeah, you use some of these online backup services, and the first time you use it, it takes 3 days to get all your stuff out there. And then after that, it's zip, 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 zip. And it's because the zip, zip represents subtle changes. Everything else in the backup is good. It's just this little change that needs to happen. And that's how these online storage accounts work as well. If you change a file, well, that file needs to be synchronized. However, everything that you synchronized before doesn't need to be resynced because it's already up there. Yeah, Linda.
Okay, if I have paper service for Microsoft Office, okay, and I want to save it, can I get it onto another computer?
Yeah. Yeah, you just sign into your OneDrive on that other computer.
Okay.
And then all that stuff, the moment
but
you've...
But how about the program?
The software.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Do you have to put it onto an external hard drive and then load it in your other computer?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. You may have to download it again from Microsoft. But the fact that you have an account, see, it's not the issue.
Office, can you share?
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is that with the Office 365, put it in there un poco más tarde.
Can you share it with one other program? How many computers can you share it with?
So with Office 365, it's not a matter of installing it on various computers. It's a matter of, does your account have access to use the program? So when you sign in, you're signing in with a Microsoft Services account that authorizes that installation of Office to work. If you have a... a different user account on that computer that doesn't have Office access, then they won't be able to use it. Does that make sense?
Okay, so I've got a desktop at home, and we've got the main one on there.
Right.
We travel with a laptop, so how do we get it on to the laptop?
So there's two different versions of the software. There's the web apps, and there's the standalone app. The standalone app, I believe that there is, you can install it on five computers, if I remember right. The web app is available for any computer you sign into.
Well, I have the standalone.
Okay.
And so if I send the program, let's say the X or whatever it is, Word X, to the cloud.
Yeah, it won't work. It absolutely won't work. In fact, nothing in a Windows world will work in that manner.
But you can put it on five computers.
From what I understand, as long as nothing's changed.
Well, I have it on all my computers because I use the disk. When I load it onto another computer, I just got to put in my code.
Because when you subscribe to the Office 365 subscription, what they say is you can download the full standalone version, you can install it. I think it was five. I think the number is five on five different computers. And then you go through an authorization for that standalone that's based on your subscription. So the moment your subscription expires, you lose access to the standalone program.
Another topic when you're done with that.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, what this comes down to, though, is Office is such an uninteresting product now that we have such great free alternatives that to buy it outright doesn't seem to make a lot of sense for us, for just general people. It makes a lot of sense in a corporate environment, sure, still, when you've got big networks, 100-plus computers, everybody needs to be on the same version. It's just a very simple solution for IT. But for folks, casual users, you used to have to buy Office because if you got sent any document, you couldn't get it open. And so you were faced with paying $200 to $400 for an Office package. And what happened was Office would get bootlegged. People would pass around. There was a whole gray industry of installing pirated versions of Office on people's computers.
What is Office 365?
It's the way you get access to Microsoft's Office package.
The one you pay for.
As a subscription.
It was kind of like the new Photoshop where it's all in the cloud.
Right. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Way. Yeah, it's just like the new Photoshop. But it's for Microsoft Office through Microsoft. So, I guess that's what I'm getting at is for casual users, I really don't see any reason why you have to be in one of these Office packages to begin with. You have the web apps from Microsoft Office available to you with about 5 gigs of storage. At the very least, they'll open documents for you. You may not be able to edit documents or edit spreadsheets, but when somebody sends them to you, you always have an option to open them and look at them. Which is, arguably one of the most important functions of why you had to buy Office before, was to be able to look at what your accountant was sending you, or look at what your grandchild is sending you, whatever it might be, your publisher. Then you've also got packages like Google Drive, which is completely free and opens all the latest Office documents. So if you do get sent something that's very Microsoft Office official, well, you can just use Google to open it for free, and you can edit that document without no hindrances to it. What the Google Drive stuff is missing is the thousands of obscure tools that get put into an Office package that 90% of people don't use in the first place. And so Google Drive has been an option for a long time now.
I use OpenOffice.org.
Well, and I was going to say, and then if you want a standalone Office package, OpenOffice.org, or I use LibreOffice. The latest release is awesome. I've just been blown away by their version 5. And you can download that for free. There is no tracking. You don't have to give them an email address or anything. And you can install that, and that opens all the latest Microsoft Office documents. It's what I run on all my stuff. In fact, the only reason I have a copy of Office, I don't even have a copy of Office running on any of my computers anymore. I keep it running on a computer at a plant I do work on because I have to support it for the people in that industry. But there's no need for me to keep a working copy of Office anymore, and I don't think there's a real reason any of you have to.
What was the name of that program you...
I like LibreOffice. I think that's...
L-I-B-R-E
Office.
That comes with Dropbox.
Well, this is getting... We're coming back around to that. The reason that you have this offering from Microsoft is because they recognize you have no reason to buy Office anymore. So they've given you a reason. 1 terabyte of disk space that you can use to your own discretion. You back your entire computer up to it. You can keep all your photos there. You can subscribe to it on your phone, and all the photos and videos you take from your phone go to that space. So they're immediately backed up. You don't have to worry about synchronizing your phone anywhere. All of a sudden, it makes complete sense to have this subscription. And then you have the added bonus of, well, you do have a full version of Microsoft Office, that if you like Office, there it is. It's for you to use. But what you're really buying is 1 terabyte of online storage. Yeah.
The Dropbox, though, my understanding is that I have to take any file that I want off my Tucson computers and put that into Dropbox in order to get it down here.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, yeah, anything... Everything
on my computer in Tucson doesn't automatically come to the computer here.
That's right. Anything that you want to have available through your Dropbox account needs to be in Dropbox. But then going back to apps and don't hold me to this because I haven't looked at their app list recently, but it's not inconceivable that there would be a backup app for Dropbox. So you go to your Dropbox and you'd run the backup app. And in the backup app, just like I think you were using, what was your online, Carbonite. You're using Carbonite to back up your computers. So it's not inconceivable that somebody has written a Dropbox app similar to Carbonite, where you go to your Dropbox account, you execute the app, you select all the things you want backed up, and it stores it in your Dropbox account.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. By the way, we have 2 new people here, Bob Marston and Sue.
Hey, guys.
They typically come to a meeting when they have a big question. I'll bet you they have a question.
We were
at
Apple.
Yeah.
We are Mac people.
Yeah, and so far all our discussion has been relevant for Mac as well.
Yeah,
I'm sorry?
They don't have troubles.
Oh, but they don't have troubles. That's the point.
Yeah.
So have you adopted to the new El Capitan operating system for the Macintosh?
No. We've got one old Mac.
Okay. Yeah, because the difference between Yosemite and the older style is quite different. Yeah. You know, it does have that feature under the login setup in system preferences. If you go under the user accounts, and you'll see listed your account, and below the list, there's a little option there that says login options. And if you click on that to the right, it'll open up and it'll have a check mark for log into this account automatically. And you just need to check that box. It's going to ask for your current password, but after that, it should just log in automatically. And if I've got the language wrong, I do know that's exactly where the setting is in both the old OS X and Yosemite. So you could look on both computers, and you'll see that it's written a little differently. It's like automatic login or login options, but you'll find them in the exact same spot. Yeah. You're welcome. Dropbox, iCloud, I'm just making a note here. OneDrive, online storage. Storage.
What do you mean online storage?
Yeah, that's cloud storage is online storage. Yep. And so just like Dropbox would have a backup app or a photo app for Dropbox, Microsoft for their OneDrive has Office is their app with all the Office keys in it, the key features, the spreadsheets and word processor and presentation and all that stuff is all available. OneNote's a great. I don't know if any of you have started using OneNote or not, but it's available on all your devices and Macintosh. OneNote's available. It allows you to take notes across various devices. It's a very basic word processor that lets you quickly add pictures, draw on top of them. You can annotate them with a stylus. If you've got like a tablet, you can draw on, right? Or you can add voice dictation to it. It's one of those things that's easy enough to use that you really don't have to understand how any of that stuff's coming together. It just is. And if you're running Windows 10, in the Notifications Center, if you pull that up, one of their classic one of their icons in that list is Note. You click this quick access button and you bring up OneNote and you can write notes. You're signed into your OneDrive account. When you go over to your device over here, and those notes are shareable to your OneNote program on your Android device or on your iPhone or on your Macintosh computer. So you can take notes and just expect them to follow your, kind of how I was talking about Wunderlist. Right? That Wunderlist being very specifically for lists, OneNote is for making extensive notes and annotating things, like pictures.
Just like you. I have a notebook.
If your computer crashes,
But I like have Evernote. Which
no,
is like
that's the point, is it's all stored out there.
Yeah. Can you buy a new computer and it's still access?
Yeah.
Now, all of this cloud storage is safe until you see on the news that somebody hacked it.
Well, yeah. You're absolutely right. We cannot get past that. There's always the potential for being hacked.
Whoever's inventing this is probably
another question.
But I guess I'm at a point where we've got way too much stuff to store that we are looking for places to make sure we don't lose it. And the convenience. I mean, it's really convenience versus security. And I just recently upgraded from a really old iPhone to a not-so-old iPhone. And one of the things that Apple's really got going for it is I was able to just take my whole profile very, very simply and easily from my old phone, put it on my new phone.
Sync.
Well, I mean, without very much thought in mind, I pull open the new phone, and my icons are all in the exact same place. All my accounts are already configured. All the data that I had in the other phone was there. I mean, I didn't... You wouldn't have to hire somebody like me to do that. That's all part of what they're selling you with this get the next iteration because it's this easy. And that kind of ease is what we're looking for with all this technology. You want to be able to pull this open and start doing the same work you were just doing on this. And I'm holding up a tablet and a cell phone. I want to be able to make notes on my computer and then refer to them when I'm in the shopping line there at Lay's because I forgot what it was I was supposed to buy. And all that to happen seamlessly. I want to be able to have a computer get stolen and not worry that all that data is lost forever because I can go home and there's a exact copy of everything there. And that's what these cloud storages are allowing us to start doing is you buy a brand new computer, you sign into it, it propagates with everything that was in your old computer.
Security is a problem, though.
Always.
Yes.
Yeah. That's never going away.
Somebody in a helicopter is going to go up to that cloud and just pick all my stuff away.
That is not a true problem. That in itself isn't something to worry about. But security will always be a problem. There isn't a year we would have this meeting where that wouldn't be a valid phrase. Security is a problem. Security is always a problem. And we're always, it's always a compromise between convenience and security. They are juxtaposed to each other.
Remember last year, I had a lady friend here whose screen turned red, and she just turned everything off and actually saved her computer. Mm-hmm. About a month ago, she gets this message on her computer. No, she got a phone call, that's what it was, from Microsoft.
Supposedly.
You know what the scam was.
Right.
She fell for it.
Mm.
And they got into her computer, and as soon, and she paid $300. And as soon as she realized what was going on, she shut it down, ran to the bank.
Oh, and shut down the process.
Oh, she shut down the process. Mm. And this is after she gave them the information, to take the $300 out.
Right.
But she ran down to the bank, and they changed it so they didn't get it.
Oh, excellent.
And I told her, I said, you know better than that.
I am still constantly surprised somebody will tell me a story where they've paid somebody to help them with the computer. Oh, they called me. They told me I was having problem. They showed me on the computer where it was having problems.
It was a Microsoft message?
No, it wasn't. But they claimed to be Microsoft. And that's the point. Is these real help doesn't call you. Real help never calls. And keep in mind, when you're ready to listen to help, you're at the most desperate, weakest point. You should not be pulling out your wallet. you should really, real help does not call you out of the blue.
And watch PayPal.
Real help is hard to get. Real help requires you going out and finding somebody to help you.
There is no bargain you ever get over the phone.
Right.
Never.
Yeah. And these people you should just hang up on. You should laugh in their face. You're not falling for the scam. Or if you need some entertainment, this last summer I fielded a half dozen at the bed and breakfast. And I'm like, all right, tell me the pitch. I'm ready to hear the latest one. Tell me how you're going to try and convince me that I should give you money and access to my computer.
Did you really say that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, and I had two of them just hang up on me as soon as I said that.
You should have said, that sounds so good.
I'm having trouble with the money order. Maybe you should deposit funds into my account so that we can verify that we're able to get a link between each other.
Yeah. But I did, too. But I had my computer kidnapped. For 4 days, they kept demanding money. After the fourth day, my computer came back.
Really?
They'll ask for a second credit card.
A virus.
They'll ask for a second credit card.
It's a virus that says you have a virus.
Oh, but you don't really.
And the first day, you can still do some things. The second day, you can do less. The third day, you can't do anything on your computer except look at this screen that tells you have a virus. But the fourth day, it was gone.
So what you bring up is something that started becoming popular a couple of years ago. In fact, I'm actually dealing with this right now with somebody's computer. There's these crypto locker viruses. And what happens is that you get infected by one of these exactly the same way you get infected by any other virus. And that your threat is higher. But what you need to do to protect yourself is no different than you're doing right now. Keep your antivirus up to date. Don't click on links and email. Be wary of suspicious web pages. Make sure that you have all your security updates for your operating system. And if you're using an old unsupported operating system like a Windows XP or an old Apple computer, you're really taking a risk because there are holes in those operating systems that are not being fixed anymore. And so you're at a higher probability of getting infected with something. The act of getting infected by one of these viruses is no different than a nuisance virus. The reason the cryptoviruses are so dangerous is because their payload is a program that, if activated, encrypts all your data using the highest level of encryption that we know right now, which is unencryptable. You cannot decrypt this stuff without a key. this is the big thing that they're fighting in Congress right now with what Apple and Google have done with their latest versions of their phones. They have made encryption on the phones so tight that the government can no longer get into them. And so they're trying to make legislation
to allow.
Right, they're trying to pass laws. And I've said before, laws are what laws are, and technology is what technology is. And what's going to happen is if they pass a law saying, Apple, you must have the ability to open this encryption, then the people that need encryption are not going to go to Apple. Right? They're just not going to do it. They're going to, because there will be encryption being used that are not subject to U.S. laws, and that's where the bad guys are going to go. And so it's only going to be the rest of us that are going to be, well, I guess the government can see all our stuff because they need to see all our stuff. But no pedophile's going to use a phone they know the government can get into. Right? It's too easy to track that information. No terrorist is going to use a phone that they know the government can get into. So they hurt all the security for us individually, for all of us, because they're trying to track down these bad guys that are never going to use that technology if they do this. So that being said, this encryption, if you lose the key to this encryption, you cannot get your data back, and that's why these viruses are so extremely dangerous. Not the way you get infected, but what they infect you with.
Could they infect the file too?
Sure. In fact, I was gonna tie that in. If you've got an open Dropbox account, this virus can track all the way down. It can follow that hard drive all the way into your cloud storage and encrypt everything in your cloud storage. When we first started talking about these crypto viruses, I mentioned that if you had a backup, say you have an external hard drive connected to your computer 24/7. Making regular backups. Well, 24/7 means that when you got infected with the crypto virus, it could encrypt that backup.
And so you can't even get into
your backup. The only protection against these crypto viruses is what they call a cold backup. And now we're rehashing stuff from last year. Mm-hmm. The cold backup is an external hard drive you connect to your clean computer once a week.
Once a month,
and you disconnect it when it's done, and you stick it in a drawer. And when you get infected with a crypto virus, you've got that cold backup sitting, knowing it's clean because it has not been connected to the computer.
You don't know if your computer is encrypted or not, do you?
Well, you do when a message flashes up saying you want your pictures, your videos, and your documents back. You're going to pay $500 to this account.
Well, yeah.
That's what these viruses do. Now, what these viruses have spawned are a bunch of Me Too viruses, like what you got. And what these are viruses that claim to be crypto locker viruses. I don't know what is. I mean, maybe they're slightly more ethical. I don't know. I don't know what the thought is behind the fact that you can actually do this encryption versus saying you're going to do this encryption. But that's what you got, is you got one of those viruses that says, hey, I'm a crypto locker virus. You've lost all your data. Pay us money at this address if you want to get it back. What happened was over a four-day period where you lost access to your computer, eventually your computer's antivirus got updated against this virus and took that virus out. Lo and behold, it had not encrypted any of your data, and all your data was available to you after the virus was taken out. And truthfully, we found a lot more of those kinds of viruses that say you'll never get your data back. These ransomware viruses. Ransomware is a terminology used for either or. Anything that pops up in front of you and says you're not getting your computer back until you pay me is a ransomware virus.
Question.
Yeah.
I back up my documents, I back up my photos, I back up, but I can't seem to back up my C drive, to mirror the C drive.
Yeah, you're really only going to be able to do that with a backup program. backup programs like the Microsoft Backup in Windows 7 or Windows 8, Windows 10, they make allowances for that, a full disaster recovery backup, which I recommend. Disaster recovery system image, that's the terminology used depending on what version of Windows you're running. I think in 7 it's a disaster recovery. In 8 I think it's called a system image.
Yeah, system image.
That's yeah, a system image. What you'd want is a cold backup of a system image.
Well, when you buy a computer, they recommend making CDs.
Recovery CDs. Yeah, and so that's to bring the whole computer back to the way you bought it. And a system image is very similar to that. Yeah?
If you have your backup on a partition in your computer, can you lock that? If you've done the backup, can you lock that partition so that's not available?
You can, but because it is physically attached, you're really at the mercy of whatever mechanism you're using to block the access. As soon as a virus becomes sophisticated enough to go through that list of things that you could do to lock out that partition, well, then it's susceptible again.
So you got to use external disconnect.
The safest backup is one that's not connected to your computer.
Windows 7, is that going to be not supported soon?
Where's my topic list? Damn it. I've got that on one of my topics here. But hold on a second. Let's see. We got to all this crypto stuff because of your... Okay, so just let me reiterate that that's what you saw, was you saw something masquerading to be a crypto virus. If it had actually been a crypto virus, there is no way to get your data back. So you may end up... You have to decide, do I have $1,000 worth of data? Is it worth paying somebody $500 to get it back? And that's...
Well, I figured that it was just a bluff, and it had a time destruct of 4 days. You know, they say, well, 4 days, he hasn't done anything, we'll let him have his computer back.
Okay, but the bluff, I mean, like, and there you are playing poker with your computer, because the longer the computer is on, the more time it has to encrypt your data. And so if it is actually encrypting your data, which is just as easy to do as putting up a fake message. I mean, that's where I don't understand the psychology behind it. I mean, is it a slightly more ethical way of compromising people? Maybe liability is completely different if you actually... I mean, encryption used to be considered a firearm. It was a controlled substance in the United States. They weren't allowed to export the G4 computers. When Apple released G4 computers, they weren't allowed to export them to foreign countries at first because they had the potential to encrypt data to such a high extent that the U.S. government considered it a controlled substance. So maybe law enforcement has set encrypting data at such a high level that the liability isn't worth it for your regular hacker. And so they won't encrypt because they don't want to be that liable if they get caught. Right. Maybe that's the mentality.
Well, the difference between larceny and grand larceny.
Right. I mean, maybe it's not. I don't know what the mentality is behind it, but there are a lot more pretending to be crypto viruses than are actual crypto viruses.
Snowden is still in Russia.
Right. Yeah. But because I'm dealing with this, I think I've got good information for you on virus scanners today. I've been dealing with a crypto virus on a customer's computer, and I had to transfer data from an old computer onto a new computer. So I've got these two different things going on right now that has prompted me to question antivirus that I'm running. Since Windows 8, well, actually, since Windows 7, I've been very satisfied with Microsoft Security Essentials. This is the antivirus that Microsoft offers people for free for their Windows computers.
What's the name of it?
Microsoft Security Essentials. Okay. Microsoft Security Essentials, it gets referred to a lot as MSE as well. I've been very happy with, and think has been very I wonder if you guys wouldn't mind shutting that window.
I would love to.
Yeah. I'm having trouble hearing myself talk. Sure, sure. If you guys can't hear down there, there's a lot of noise going on. Didn't they do that to us last week, too?
Yes.
They just started something out there right at the end of club.
Pumping propane.
Yeah?
Can you shut the window?
Yeah, Chester, you mind closing that one so maybe we can hear a little better? So I am backpedaling on Microsoft Security Essentials recently. I had an experience where I used it to scan somebody's hard drive, their old computer's hard drive, found a virus, which is not uncommon when you're transferring data back. It was lying dormant. There was no reason. It wasn't infected with it. It was just something that like got attached to an email message and was sitting in a folder. So I wasn't surprised by one virus being found on an old computer. And so it cleaned that, and I took the hard drive over to the customer's house, plugged it in. They have MicroTrends antivirus. I start copying a big backup of all their data from my backup drive. Identify 6 more virus files. MicroTrends. Lying dormant in a folder. Microsoft Security Essentials didn't find it on my computer. They didn't find it when I was working with it on the office. I didn't find it until I was sitting on my customer's computer. Now, this is not a great threat. This is a dormant virus. So that I would have to have gone and started up those files specifically to get infected with the virus. But I'm a little put off that Microsoft Security Essentials didn't find them.
Maybe that's why my new Dell has McAfee.
No. It has McAfee because McAfee paid Dell to put it on there.
And they're hoping you renew it.
There's that one out.
Well, now it's Windows Defender anyway.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I should have said that. Since 8, it's been called Windows Defender. You're absolutely right, Linda. The language is Defender. It's Microsoft Security Essentials on Windows 7 and Vista. But and XP, too, because they keep maintaining it for XP. Yeah. But under Windows 8, 8.1, and Windows 10, it's Microsoft Defender, and it's built into the operating system. And what they've been allowing us to believe is it's built in. Just use it. Under 8, I really do believe it was the best option for antivirus. But now the other antivirus companies have caught up. Windows 10 is Windows 8. They have good offerings of third-party antivirus for 8, 8.1, and 10. There's no reason to think that Windows Defender, i.e. Windows Microsoft Security Essentials, is your best option. It is not, and my experience proves it. So I started researching this week on some better antiviruses for Windows 10, which would apply to Windows 8 as well. And what I've come up with so far is I'm back on Panda. I am back on Panda's free cloud antivirus. It is getting top marks. If you look at the tech journalists that are reviewing these, Panda is one of the leading. PC Mag has made it their editor's choice. And keep in mind these reviews, they change every week. But I was a big fan of Panda back before Windows 8. On Windows 7, I really liked Panda. I had a couple of update issues and got a little frustrated with them. When Windows 8 came out, I was advising people to stay with the Windows Defender, and it was mostly because the third-party antivirus did not have a good offering for Windows 8. It was too new. And so people were loading McAfee. Like Dell was loading McAfee's into a Windows 8 computer, but it was running like crap. And the only reason they were loading it was because they were being paid by McAfee's to put it into their computer.
I bit the bullet and upgraded to AVG Pro.
AVG is on the top of the list.
But the Pro is even better. It does all kinds of things for me, including searches for the latest drivers. And
It's still bloatware. It's still a huge package to install. But it is getting top marks for flagging and finding viruses, specifically viruses of strange behavior, like unidentified viruses, like out there in the wild, haven't they don't have a signature for yet. AVG and Panda are at the top of the list on these.
Are they paid or are they free?
Of the freeze. I'm always looking for the free stuff.
The pro is paid. It's, I think, $40 a year.
Now, do they slow your computer down?
You know, how are you feeling about AVG? AVG, for a while there, was a real memory hog. And it
I got all kind of memory anyway, so, you know.
I just took it off of somebody's Vista.
Vista,
actually was sucking the life out of the computer.
That's been my experience with AVG, but I haven't used it on eight.
And it's annoying. Nice thing about Defender and maybe Panda, they're operating in the background.
Right.
AVG is super annoying. It's constantly.
I don't experience that.
So, yeah. Well, Linda's talking about the free version. The free version. And we are talking about free versions. When I'm talking about antivirus, I'm always talking about free versions. There seldom do I have a reason to recommend a paid version.
I've had AVG for years, the paid version.
Yeah.
I've never had to have
any. No, me. Yeah.
The ratings say that they're the best.
Yeah, again, out of the reviews I've found for antiviruses, AVG and Panda have been on the top of the list for the free versions. As far as what they do, how they do it, that's questionable. Like what Linda's saying, sucking the life out of the computer, that's sure been my experience with AVG, and with the free version. That's been my experience. It's been one of the reasons I've recommended people getting away from it. Not that it doesn't do a great job, but on older computers with less memory and less performance, you will feel it with AVG in it.
They've learned to pay off the Congress.
I'm sorry?
They've learned to pay off the Congress.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, corruption. Absolutely. Our Congress is the best Congress money can buy.
Okay.
And they're bought by everybody that's really doing good business.
All right.
Now do you get it?
The best decision makers money can buy.
Okay. Absolutely.
What about 7? Is 7 going to be supported?
All right. So, let me see if we've gotten out of... I just wanted to mention... I've been working with Avast. The Trends Micro that found these was a paid version. Mm-hmm. It was somebody's paying a subscription fee to Trends Micro. Avast, I'm using the free version. I'm finding it annoying. It's got pop-ups that come up that remind you of products you could be using.
Yep.
Right? With Avast is a really decent antivirus. I use it on my Macintosh, and I've been using it on my other Windows 10 laptop. But they do pop up to remind you of products you could be taking advantage of that you're not.
Yeah.
And it will entice you. Some of those pop-ups will entice you to explore concepts such as boost your performance. And it'll explore it all the way up to, now would you like to do it? Because we'll sell it to you if you want to do it. You waste all this time on boosting your performance that won't have anything to do with boosting your performance until you buy it.
That's so damn aggravating. I want to shoot the damn...
It's enough to make me want to take Avast out, even though it is a very good... And Avast right now is my Macintosh recommendation for a sophisticated antivirus on Macintosh, because the Clam XAV has gone to a version 3, which is a pay per version. Clam XAV version 2 is still free, open source, will always be, and is updated, but it's not as sophisticated antivirus as people need these days. It never was a very sophisticated antivirus, but it's a Mac.
I didn't think Mac needed an antivirus.
Oh, it does, but most of the job of an antivirus on a Mac is preventing you from passing Windows viruses to your friends.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean that's really what it's doing. Yeah, it's really you run antivirus on a Mac. A Mac can be infected, but it's got such a small usage that it's a very very small target, and so it can easily be infected with a virus the same way a Windows computer is. It's just got 3-4% of the market. So there aren't a lot of Mac viruses out there. That's the only protection you have without antivirus. But truthfully, when you use antivirus on a Macintosh, what you're really doing is preventing the spread of Windows viruses. You're doing it kind of as a public service. you're keeping your friends and family out of trouble. yes, Linda.
I've had two calls from people that aren't happy with Windows 10, and they want to go back to Windows 8. So I Googled it, and this is what it said. It said that if you've had it in your computer for 30 days, you cannot go back.
That's right.
So there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, what they're referring to is their removal, the Microsoft removal system of the operating system. Now, what they still have an option is restoring the computer.
But if you don't have the disk, how are you going to restore it?
Well, they should have done a backup before they upgraded to 10.
Well.
It's so easy to press the button.
Right. And that's what I've said all along, and that's what I've said in all the blog posts, on the Facebook pages, and every time I mention Windows 10, if you're going to do it, make sure you've got a complete system recovery backup. You've got a system image, disaster recovery backup. You've created your restore disks for your platform. You have a Toshiba laptop, you can create DVDs to restore the Toshiba laptop to what you bought it from.
Well, if how do you go back to 7 if you're within the 30 days?
You use Microsoft's Restore.
It says on it. You go to security.
Microsoft has always offered that since about Windows XP.
I know that works really well.
Even on a non-activated Windows 10?
Sure. But it is activated the moment you install it.
Well, mine isn't activated. But it's still on there. It wants me to activate it, but I'm not able to.
Oh, wow. Okay. Cool. Because what a great yardstick, right? Because... Well, it's got a countdown. The countdown's basically telling you when it's too late to use Microsoft to restore back to 7. Every time you bring it on, it says, you've got 12 more days to activate this.
It doesn't say that. It just says not, you know, just activate it. I downloaded the flash drive to be able to install the Windows 10 to free version.
Okay, you may have other issues going on then. Because of that methodology... It may not recognize your hard drive, your hardware as being...
Well, I made a backup. Maybe I'll be able to use the backup, you know, using Acronis or something and go back to what I have.
Yeah. Yeah, because you really need to have gone through the procedure that when it showed up on the taskbar saying upgrade to Windows 10 and reserve your copy for Windows 10. See, when you do that, then what you've done is you've taken the hardware ID of your computer... and put it in a database in Microsoft. So from that point on, then you can use a flash drive to, because it should already be activated. Yeah.
Can we find out how many people use Windows 7 in this group, and how many people use Windows 8, and how many people use Windows 10? I'd like to know.
Oh, you just do a show of hands. How many people use Windows 7 right now?
Seven. I have that on one computer.
How many people use Windows 8? I've got. How many people are using Windows 10?
kind of a draw.
Yeah, it looks like about the same amount of people.
Yeah,
I think 7's a great operating system. I think 10's a great operating system. I thought 8 was a great operating system, but I agree with the complaints. I think that it was jarring the way they changed our user interface. I think it was very difficult for people. They needed a less of a learning curve. But anybody that's adopted to it doesn't... I mean, Chester, you use it all the time.
But it's still a pain in the ass.
Well, it is if you're still in that paradigm of thought. It's and honestly, if you spend time with 10, you'd be like, well, why didn't they just give us 10 for a couple of years before trying to force 8 on us? Because it would have made a lot more sense.
One thing I did do is I went and found the control panel. And I put it on my desktop.
Yeah,
because
sure.
It's a lot easier than all their little boxes now to go and find your programs.
Well, to give you an example, are you on 10 or 8?
I'm on 10.
Okay, so to give you an example, I think it's the same on 8. If you go to the Windows button and click with the right mouse button, you'll find control panel right there.
Click with the right mouse.
With the right mouse button.
Use the right mouse.
Click on the Windows button with the right mouse button, and you'll find a whole slew of things that you can't seem to find anywhere else.
Right. I was looking all over for it, and then I went on
the
Cortana,
device manager's in there, the event logs in there.
Oh,
the system manager's
in
there. The traditional control panel is in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the command prompt is in there. The run as is in there. All these things that used to be right in front of you are now in that list. Now, here's where they screwed up with 8. They did stuff like that. They didn't tell anybody where to find it.
Right.
Right? So how are you supposed to know to hit the right mouse button on that? You're just supposed to discover it by accident.
Right. Well, I'm going to go back and buy the startup because... they wouldn't let you transfer it over from 8, so you have to buy a new one for $3.99.
Yeah, but what do you need it for?
It puts the old start menu right on your desktop.
Well, you don't like the new start menu at 10?
I don't like finding stuff. Yeah, when you go to find your programs and features, they're all, you know, so that's why I went and put the control panel back on to find it, because you go to find your programs and features, like if you want to uninstall something. It's really hard to find it. And people who aren't experienced with...
Well, if you're looking for the traditional control add remove programs, just click with the right mouse button on the logo and pull up control panel. And you'll get the Windows 7 control panel.
See?
Yeah. Now, what's going to happen, though, is those traditional controls in the format you're used to seeing them in, I bet by December they're gone. If they're not gone, there are going to be even less of them because they're migrating everything over to the new look and feel. And those are just remnants that are left over from Windows 8, that are left over from Windows 7. But you can't keep relying on them because they will disappear.
I don't want to give up my Windows Media Center. To me, that thing is gold. And I won't switch my program because of that.
Right.
Yeah. That's why I'll stay with 7 because why did they put that on?
Yeah, and they're not even working on Media Center anymore. It's gone.
Yeah.
Okay, so Vista, Windows XP are no longer supported. So if you use those, you are susceptible to all kinds of problems.
Right. And you really don't want to be running, if you've got a computer that can run Vista, you've got a computer that can run 7, so you might as well be running 7 because it requires less hardware.
Okay, so
it's actually a performance boost to go to
7.
Oh, and let me say, I got tremendous performance boosts from this and my other computer from going from 7 to 10. I mean, the computer is faster under 10 than it was under 7.
So when is 7 going to not be?
I think it's
2020.
Yeah.
In fact, Microsoft has just announced that they're extending sales of Windows 7 to OEMs, so vendors like HP and Dell will still be allowed to sell computers with Windows 7 for the next year. Now, I know from my industry, what that's really saying is you've got corporations that are not moving to Windows 10 fast enough. And so they have to be able to support that, and they're ready to buy new computers. And so part of a partner arrangement with people like HP and Dell on Microsoft's side is they've said, okay, it's okay to keep selling Windows 7. Windows 7 also will, always, for the next year, will have the ability to run to Windows 10. And so you can bet that's in the partner agreement as well, is that you sell them as Windows 7 with the ability to upgrade to Windows 10 for only a year for free. And then after that, you're selling Windows 10 computers.
How did you find out Windows 2020? You just go to the computer and say, when is it going to be?
No, Microsoft just announces that. They've got a table out there on the internet that you can go read, and it shows when they stop support for things. Okay, Dag, I'll head over there next. Yeah.
Aren't they still supporting Vista?
No.
Oh, I thought they were.
No, they've dropped support for Vista. Wait, now that I say that, maybe you're right.
Of course, the good thing is that you won't get any updates that screw up your computer.
No, I think they dropped support for Vista next year or the year after. Is it 2017? Maybe it's 2017 they dropped Vista support. It would be right now. They've got the bare minimum support for Vista. They've got security and patches. No more features. No more online help. No more chat. No more telephone support. Which most of that you couldn't take advantage of anyway, because when they do a deal with an HP or a Dell or an Asus, they specifically make that Dell's responsibility or HP's responsibility. The only people that get Windows support from Microsoft are people that buy a retail box of the operating system. So most of you weren't able to take advantage of that kind of support anyway. And that's been gone from Vista for a while now. But it seems like they're doing security updates until 2017. Is that right, Linda? Are you looking that up?
Right now.
Okay. I think it's 2017 they dropped security updates for it.
I have a question.
Yes.
I would like to dump DirecTV. I still want to get my sports content.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there a way to do that?
Who's got a recommendation for sports without DirecTV?
April 11th, 2017.
IPTV. What do you pay for that?
Well, you can do it yourself. Linda's been doing it herself.
I think we've got 8 people in our group now doing it. And it is a small box you buy.
Do you have hardware to buy?
Huh?
Yeah.
The small box and the dongle with freight is like $90. And then it's going to be $105 a year.
For the service.
For the service.
Keeps the hell out of what I'm paying for DirecTV.
And I will say only a few negatives, okay? One is, it isn't the speed of the internet that we have, it's the bandwidth that we have. You do get some freezing. And you do get somewhere the audio's not the same as the video.
How old?
But for $105 a year, it's well worth it.
Unlimited.
And there's over 900 channels.
And you should have over 5 megabytes of bandwidth.
There's about 40 pay-per-view channels. You get all the pay-per-view sports, all the fights, all the UFC.
You get
a video club that's got over
The name of his shop.
Over 500.
I'm trying to remember it now. It's Hospital Cellular.
I'm talking about movies.
Hospital, like Cell Hospital.
And there's no extra charge for those.
No.
He's in Wimus.
So you go online.
Do you know where the Electra building is?
Yes.
So his office is on the street behind Electra.
Okay.
Perpendicular.
Parallel.
Okay. Like if you could look out, you'd look out
because
above the Cerdan.
So there's a, I know there's a shooter shop.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so he's got there's a little bit of on street parking.
Okay.
If it's a one way street, so you have to go past Electra.
Go
up, go up on the next street. You can go up, and then turn left and go and follow a parallel to the Cerdan, but coming back. Hospital Cellular.
What was it last?
Hospital Cellular.
So what about like CBS?
And as you're coming back on that road, it's on the right side. His name is Benny Marquez. His name's Benny Marquez.
Sunday,
like Benito. Benny.
On the games because it's East Coast.
And it seems like there's
so
people there except for outside
East
of lunch.
Coast.
Seems like they're there fairly early in the morning. They
block
go
out
late in
California
the evening, like about 6
teams,
or 7
so.
At night.
They won't block
yeah,
out California.
Just bring
teams,
it by to
so.
Him.
They're on the national day.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
get
no
the,
problem.
The game.
He's the guy. He replaces screens, batteries. He does the. He is. The guy that's got the best reputation in town.
That's why I come here.
Yeah.
I fixed my Roku business.
Like
okay.
Last night,
yeah,
game
I had one delivered
6:30.
In my house, and a lady friend of mine put it in the mail.
So it's
Oh, great. Well, okay, so you a remote or another Roku? Okay, great.
Monday night football game.
Okay, so Monday night's on ESPN. Thursday night's on NFL Network, so you're sure.
All right.
Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Sure
it was a lot of fun. Is there any last-minute questions I should get at? We're a little over, but I'd be happy to answer some last-minute questions.
What was her name?
Okay.
I've got this cricket. I don't have service here in Mexico, but I got Roma and I got 4G Lite. Okay.
Right.
Now when I go onto a website, it says website not available. So my question, but somebody called me from the United States. They will ring my phone. Am I getting charged extra? Do I know that?
Well, you're probably your cell phone calls are subject to whatever your cricket contract is on roaming, because you are roaming.
Right.
And that's the reason you can't get that. Your phone has probably been set to not allow data while roaming.
Oh, okay, but getting phone calls is okay.
Well, that's the way it's set.
Oh, good. So I have from the United States, I know I can dial Mexico. I know that.
Right, but you are subject to whatever your contract is for receiving calls on roaming in Mexico.
Okay,
when I call
$30 a month
for DirecTV
and they black out everything I want to watch.
My plan is $50 a month, and that's it. There's no extras. And I asked him about the. I said, do I have roaming privileges in Mexico? He said, no, you don't.
But yet I'm getting calls for the IDs. For this service.
Well,
there are services.
I would want to check my contract to see how you deal with roaming.
You want to save money, and you don't mind a little gray area.
Find out.
I'll
speak to another representative.
Well, I just have regular telephone.
Oh, no, you know, we go and work a bed and breakfast in Alaska every summer
in
Anchorage.
You can use the dongle, but because of the walls.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Most of us have better hardware.
I have a Generation 1 iPad.
So I like having
which I now got an tab.
Android. Wireless.
The thing became obsolete.
Do I have to buy that too?
Yeah.
Right.
Wireless.
It's got just barely $100 value.
Okay, what should I do with it? Give it away?
Well, you know, those kinds of devices, I keep
I
stuff like that plugged in on the coffee table.
TV.
You can still read web pages with it.
It's great internet vehicle, just as good as any of them.
As long as you've still got use out of it, keep using it.
But it's got very little...
Worth on the market. There are very few people looking
to buy
something.
I just bought the Samsung keyboard. Go on eBay because Samsung was only 99 bucks. The issue there is just
probably most of what they want to do with it, they wouldn't be able to do because it's not compatible with the latest software. And it really, you got a halfway decent web browser and it's still.
Yeah, it's my family's.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's my folks' business, and we've been involved in it for the last 15 years. Oh, that's the reason we started going in the first place. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good on you.
Right. And are you originally from Homer?
We spent the last 28 summers up there.
Okay.
We lived here for the last 20 years.
How'd you end up at Homer?
Well, I was living up in the Ruby Mountains in Florida, and I ran into a guy that ran a campground up in Homer.
But
I realized you could just hunt out the backyard if you were there.
I was hunting, but I like fishing.
Okay.
And he was an ex-commercial fisherman, so was I.
Okay.
So
they're all
so
new
got
to me.
Talking, and he said, come on up. Oh, well. And I came up there and I loved it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I grew up in Alaska. I grew up in Anchorage in the city. And then I've been living down here. This is my 20th year living down here. And so I've made regular annual trips up in the summer, and it just turned into... Now I've got two family businesses. I've got a computer consulting business down here and a bed and breakfast business up there. Both seasonal.
Yeah,
everything's good. Yeah.
Okay, Scott, so thank you.
All right, we'll see you next week.
I can't. Well, I don't know.
Maybe.
My brother
I'll
comes
definitely
in.
Be. Yeah, I can't get my Plex server to work. I can't, you know, I got Plex and I got it off. My Plex server says, I try to get onto the server and it says server not available. and I downloaded the latest server and everything. It says sign in. I sign in, and it says server not available.
You got the latest server software. You got the latest client software.
Yeah, but I just can't connect. This has been going on for the longest time. Once I leave the house, I don't have access to. When I left the house I had access.
Well, now, if you leave the house, then the Plex server has to be set up for remote access.
That's what I want. Yeah.
And then it has to be able to tunnel out of your firewall. So
I don't use no virus protection, no firewall, no nothing.
Okay, well this would be in your router. Your router would have to be allowed to open a port like using PNP, the plug-in play.
3400 or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That would have to be open on your router so that you. Because what you're doing is you're announcing to the Plex server where to find.
Yeah.
The server is announcing to the service where to find your server.
Actually, you know, I've got this stupid thing. I just see, like, a server. But anyhow, I'm not on the internet now.
Okay.
That might
right.
be soon.
You know, I told my wife here I would move here just for the weekly meetings here. This is the highlight of my trip.
Well, thank you.
I love it.
That's great. That's a nice thing to say. Say it on an iTunes review for me so people find my podcast.
Oh, yes. One of these days I got to go check that out to see how they even do it.
Yeah. Are you just bringing it to me? I didn't get a chance to do the research I was going to do.
On what?
On how to do the changeover. I got busy with other projects this week.
I put it in my computer, the NovaConf.
Yeah.
And the TP tool. I already downloaded all of it.
Okay.
I just don't know where to go from there. I mean, I don't understand it.
Well, if you want to leave it with me, I'll make it a priority this week. I just didn't get a chance last week to do the research, so I'm not prepared to do it yet.
It's on Roy's.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I just haven't done it yet.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Do you want me to keep it?
No, it's up to you. I'm just telling you right now I'm not ready.
Oh, then you're not ready.
I'm not ready. I'm sorry. I wish I was.
That's all right. I mean, I can do it at home, but I'm nervous.
Right. Right. Well, you don't need to be because I want to do it to mine, so I'll do it on mine first, and then you can let me do it.
Okay.
Or I can say, Linda, it's really easy. Don't be nervous.
Okay.
Because I definitely want to do the same work.
No, I've got it all. I've got the two programs downloaded in my computer ready to go.
It took me forever to get to KitKat just because I kept getting sidetracked with other things, and that's what happened this last week.
See, Roy had his dual booting.
Right, that's what I'm doing
then
with this
one.
Then
he was having a problem with the camera. But I think since he wiped away, I just want to wipe it out and put in Android.
Hey, if we can't get the cameras working under 5, I'm staying with KitKat because it's my Skype machine as well.
Well, I think the key fool's around.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen anything that said they lost the camera.
Because I know while they were getting the KitKat, they had camera issues.
But I don't care about keeping WebOS.
Right.
So I just want to wipe it out, put the Android in, then Bill can read the books on it, and that's what I want it to
do. Okay. Well, let's have the same plan, but for next week.
And then I'll bring it back.
Okay.
Or you'll tell me.
Or I'll tell you.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, that is everyone. I'm sitting here all by myself, but I'm still broadcasting, so I should probably sign off. You've been listening to the San Carlos Computer Club, and my name is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. If you're looking for a recording of this meeting or prior meetings that we've had, you can find them at our website at sccclub.org. You can also, if you're looking for computer help and support here in San Carlos, Mexico, or with Maquilas and Empalme and Guaymas, you can get a hold of our offices at 226-0209 or through our website at internationalcs.net. We will be doing this again next Tuesday, so just check here back, and you'll be able to hear the same presentation again. No, yo tengo que ir. Gracias.
Ya te quiere.
Okay. We'll see you next Tuesday. Until then, tech on.